Chapter 2. Charlie. Charlie stepped through the Seraph's portal and into Heaven's streets, right outside Heaven's courthouse. It was a tall, megastructure that looked like a massive, thickly built watchtower, with a high roof, white color scheme trimmed in gold, and gargoyles of archangels perched on top of the roof, also shining golden. Emily beckoned Charlie forward as the gold and white marble front gate swung open for her, and they headed inside. As she walked up to the structure, Charlie saw more details of its beautiful construction. The shining trim was inlaid with holy words in ancient human tongues, the twisting symbols meaningless to Charlie, but they were at least beautiful. And the tall, dark wood front doors had carvings of angels bearing scales and scrolls, truly spoke to the divine nature of this place and its purpose. At least the people who had ruined her life had talent in exterior design. The chains around her body were almost scorching hot, but Charlie didn't flinch nor complain. Her entire form ached with bruises. Her head was throbbing from the weeping and wailing cries that she couldn't stop. But she didn't say anything to her captor, and only friend she seemed to have here. As she walked down the long halls of the courthouse, she passed concerned-looking angels of every description who didn't seem entirely sure she should be there. Charlie was led along by a Seraph, though, so they held their tongues and assumed it was official business. The few times she could make out Emily's face through her tears, a profound sadness was all that she saw. The angels seemed moved by her agony, and yet it didn't matter. Nothing at all mattered anymore. Her father, her lover, all her friends were dead and gone. The hotel was burned and destroyed, the corpses of her loved ones and allies left out to attract carrion, while the exorcists, of course, had taken surely their dead with them. As they reached a less busy part of the hallway in the large building, Emily pulled her aside and gave her a brief hug, which the princess wouldn't have been able to muster the strength to return, even if she hadn't been chained up. The angel looked into her eyes seriously, trying to foster a true emotional connection.
"Charlie, I know nothing I say will make it better, but..."
Emily was speaking, and somewhere Charlie knew this. She was aware that the girl is making noises and trying to communicate with her, trying to relate or comfort, but it doesn't register. While she's speaking plainly, and somewhere inside her mind, Charlie knows the words she's saying, it's like they're another language. Her system is so shocked, her life so destroyed in this moment, that she just doesn't have the capacity to process anything. A profound numbness and loss of self settles on her, as she remembers time long past. She remembers playing with her father in the garden outside their home. She remembers the first time that her and Vaggy made love. She remembers the sound of Angel Dust's laughter, Serpentius's nervous yet hopeful smile, the feeling of her father's arms holding her, of Vaggy holding her, and all of her friends together in one big group hug. It had been on the 6-month anniversary of the hotel, just a few weeks before today. In that moment, she thought she'd always be happy. Charlie had known in her heart that she'd found her calling, and that this hotel and her dream were really meant to come true. All she had to do was drive off the extermination, and they would be fine. That was all she had to do. Then she failed, and they took it all away. Bit by bit, one at a time, by sword swing, by spear thrust, by mace and axe and dagger and 10,000 angry fists to wield them all, they took it away. They smashed and stabbed and gutted her dreams and stomped them dead for good measure. In that same red and gold mud where the corpses of her friends and allies laid rotting was her dreams. It was almost funny. She'd struggled, sacrificed, gone up and down hell, been kind and selfless to everyone, opened her heart and home to them all and asked them to give her a chance, and they'd
on her. They laughed and watched as she lost everything. But they had been punished too. Her people had been slaughtered for hours on end. Almost a whole day and night of killing had passed before the exorcists had returned from their extermination. Almost a whole day and night of killing had passed before the exorcists had returned from the extermination, and Adam dragged her up here. All those people who abandoned her, almost all of them, were slain. If they just helped in the first place, they could have won. Everything would have turned out okay, and they all would have survived. But the residents of Pentagram City had abandoned her to die, and died themselves. And now, alone in the world, she would be forced to carry on. Yeah, that was funny. And soon her tears became laughter. First it was gentle, barely a giggle. But as she thought about it more, it became even funnier. And she laughed harder. Dead. All dead. They doubted Charlie, scoffed at her, acted as if she was the most clueless, helpless little ditz in the underworld, and then turned their noses up at their princess when she needed them the most. And now they were dead. She was almost laughing maniacally, falling to her knees in the hallway, sinking to the cold, hard marble floor next to the confused and concerned Emily and the occasional worried angelic figure who moved to and from different parts of the building like busy little ants. As the laughing fit slowly passed, she felt the calm of a miserable acceptance to this foul world settle on her. For almost 5 long minutes, her manic cackling turned into a softer chuckle, then a few peals of giggling, and finally, she just sat there, feeling drained. Her emotions were overworked. The sheer amount of trauma and upset she'd endured had overtaxed the princess more than her mind could bear for the moment, and so she just blanked out for a while, staring into nothing. Emily pushed her gently, then more firmly, until finally Charlie seemed to realize for the first time where she was.
Charlie!
The angel was yelling at her, stopping short when she realized that the princess had come too.
I'm fine,
she mumbled distantly, as if waking up from a deep sleep in a deeper dream.
Are you gonna be able to keep going? We need to talk to Sarah, and a few of the archangels will want to speak to you as well,
Emily said cautiously.
Yes,
was all Charlie said, a stony look of resignation passing her features as she seemed to accept where she was and what she had to do. Emily pulled her up to her feet as Charlie, because she was chained up, had a hard time standing on her own. A few angels were staring at her and looking, whispering to each other as if her current emotional turmoil was some kind of celebrity gossip or entertainment for them to judge and stare at. The princess felt a detached sort of outrage at this, but she didn't complain openly. Everything in her life was destroyed, and others just watched, pointing and whispering to each other how silly and stupid she'd been, as if Charlie wasn't already aware.
I just want you to know I'm sorry for what happened,
Emily started.
If I'd known what Adam planned to do, if I'd even suspected, I would have...
It was Adam, Emily, she said tonelessly, detached and tired.
You couldn't have stopped him any more than I did. Don't be sorry.
Emily looked as if she wanted to say more, to express more condolences and make Charlie feel better, maybe, offer words of encouragement or simple kindness. But in the end, she just sighed and hugged Charlie.
Adam did something truly evil to you,
she whispered in the princess's ear.
I can't take it back, but I can tell you that you have at least one friend here.
Emily winked, and Charlie did her best to smile, but it wasn't much more than a sad sort of twist of the mouth, a mere suggestion of her once wide, welcoming expression. Like Charlie herself, it was but a shadow of what it once had been. Unlike last time, where her and Faggy had gone to the courtroom, Emily took a different turn, and brought Charlie deeper into the courthouse, to a private meeting room. While the inside of the building had been brightly lit, white and gold up and down, this one was more subdued. The walls were gray, and there was a long table facing her horizontally. On one end of the table, three angels were gathered, quietly observing her enter. Charlie recognized Sarah immediately, looking withdrawn and neutral, hands clasped before her and resting on the table. Her white hair and pure white robes with the white wings caused her to stand out from everyone else in the room. It seemed that, in this place, even well lit as it was through the heavenly candle flame, her form shone with a divine glow. Her large eyes, both on her head and in her pure white halo, stared into Charlie's soul, her expression unreadable, as the princess glared at her. Adam killed them, but she let him do it. Charlie hated the elder Sarah for that, and knew that she would continue to hate her for it forever. It was an odd feeling, hating someone, genuinely wanting them to die. Charlie had never felt this way before now, never experienced such spite. In any other case, it would have scared her. But after what she went through, she couldn't feel anything but cold, certain hatred towards Sarah. It was overwhelming. Next to Sarah, there was an olive-skinned, handsome angel with tired eyes and a patient, calm expression. He was slender but well-built, wearing a white robe trimmed in green, and had wavy, light brown hair that came down to his shoulders. Green eyes, spotted with bits of gold and brown, soft wings that sported white spots on a brown coat on the outside, and pure white on the inside. He looked at Charlie with genuine pity. The sorrow she saw in his eyes actually looked sincere, conveying a sense of regret and profound melancholy. His halo was green, with a burning heart set in the 6 o'clock position of its ring. He had a staff that rested against the table he sat at, a Cairo carved into the top of it, painted a soft red, contrasted against the staff's natural wood, and he reached up to touch the device as he stared at her, bowing his head to whisper something that could have been a prayer. The final angel had elected to stand. This one was not like any angel Charlie had ever seen. Even in her disgust and hate towards the denizens of heaven, this one genuinely frightened her. He was broad of shoulder and wide of arm, with a jutting, barrel-chested frame and thick, powerful legs. Everything about him exuded pure, physical perfection. This one didn't wear a robe either, but armor. Thick plates of matte black steel were layered upon his frame in the style of a medieval knight. Like the pictures in the storybooks she'd read when she was little, and he stood head and shoulders taller than almost anyone she'd ever seen. Alistair would have been looking up at him, and her father would barely have stood as tall as his waist. He had a huge, visored barbute helmet under one arm, and on his chest in bright, shining gold was inlaid a beautifully etched cross. The same motif was done upon the upper plates of his gauntlets and greaves, and stamped into the forehead of his helmet. His face was almost white, like her father's had been. But his countenance was hard and cold. The look he gave her was a grimace, barely less than a snarl, blood-red irises staring into her soul. He had short, curly, bright blonde hair, and on his hip was a sword as tall as she was and nearly as thick. But above all, what captured Charlie's attention about this juggernaut were his wings. They were huge, bigger than she was, and they gleamed in the light brilliantly. Each feather was a shiny, silvery steel, small and sharp, none wider than Charlie's palm. Yet, as they moved when the angel breathed or shifted his weight, they sounded like steel softly rubbing against steel, making a soft, scratching hiss. She realized, belatedly, that those feathers were all blades. Every last one a weapon. His halo was black as midnight, with seven ornamental spikes, formed to look like swords set along the ring evenly. They pointed up from his head like the miniature blades meant to stab the sky itself.
"You can go now, Emily,"
Sarah said flatly, and Emily looked hurt to be excluded from the meeting, but simply lowered her eyes and nodded.
"Yes, Sarah,"
she said, before reaching out and hugging Charlie quickly.
"Good luck,"
she whispered. Charlie wanted to ask what she meant by that, but before she could open her mouth to speak, Emily was gone. Sighing, the daughter of the Morning Star turned to face the trio. Sarah snapped her fingers, and the binding chains that held Charlie snapped away as the huge, armored angel began to speak in a low, wrathful growl.
"I still say we should finish the job Adam was too lazy to follow through on. My brother's death will let those filthy Goetians, and Divine knows what else, gain power in hell. And you can't browbeat them like you could Lucifer,"
the huge, black-armored angel said, staring down Sarah.
"Let me take the Faith Sworn down there and wipe them out. It would be easy now. Secure it. Destroy it. Once and for all, or..."
"Michael, enough," the one with the green eyes said. "Your zeal is noted and appreciated, but there has been enough bloodshed this day. It would be unwise to attempt a full extermination. You would not get everyone, and what you miss will rise up to oppose us with true determination. Better to show leniency now and save lives. We should not sacrifice souls wantonly. Every life is precious."
Michael seethed, fist clenching as he pointed accusingly at his far calmer, leaner counterpart.
"Leniency! Leniency! Adam has slaughtered in earnest! He has declared war! A war that I will finish!"
Sarah spoke this time, her voice cutting through Michael's rage. "Silence!" Her divine light flared brighter than the sun for an instant, and Charlie saw stars.
"Gabriel is right, War Master. Souls must be balanced, and lives must be spared. Every loss heaven suffers is a tragedy. Even one divine life lost is one life too many. We will look after our own and ensure that they do the same. That is the final word of the Seraphim on this matter, and this word represents the will of heaven. You will not spend the lives of the Faith Sworn in hell without express order. You will not go down there and kill without our permission. Is that understood?"
Michael's eyes flashed with rage for a moment. He looked like he was about to draw that sword at his waist and impale the Seraphim on it. But after grinding his teeth and lowering his pointing finger, he stood in stoic, boiling wrath.
"Fine,"
he spat through a clenched jaw. Turning to Charlie, Sarah finally addressed her.
"Now then, Charlie Morningstar, we have brought you here today in order to brief you for taking your father's role as the new Queen of Hell. His death was an unforeseen..."
"Murder," Charlie hissed. There was an uneasy pause, and Charlie spoke clearer.
"My father didn't just die. He was murdered."
Another pause, and finally, Gabriel nodded.
"Yes, murder. An action Adam took without the consent of any assembled here. An unlawful killing."
Michael gave a snort of derision, and Charlie and Gabriel both glared at him. If the angel noticed, he gave no sign of it,
simply staring at Charlie, lip upraised, as if she were a particularly disgusting bug that he was trying to decide whether or not to crush.
After Lucifer's murder, there will be a power vacuum in hell, Sarah said. The Sins, the Goetians, even some of the more powerful overlords may seek to take the throne in this hour of uncertainty. Heaven would like for you to continue keeping those forces in check to avoid another war, and to rule as your father did, fostering stability and peace, in the interest of ensuring no more lives are lost. As queen, you will inherit your father's power and his stewardship over hell, his legions, assets, and obligations to rule in concert with heaven will pass to you. Do you understand?
Charlie was quiet for a long time. She would simply take her father's place. Just like that. Everything she knew, gone. Everyone she loved, slain. Her whole life in tatters. And she was expected to take up the mantle and rule all of hell. For them. For those responsible, through negligence or tacit encouragement or simple ignorance, for them, she was expected to rule. They ruin her life like this, then drop the heaviest responsibility she could possibly bear onto her head, just like that?
Why me? She asked after a moment. Is there no one else?
Gabriel spoke now, gently and kindly, with a warmth that she had never expected from an angel.
I understand this is staggering, to expect you to do this, and to carry this burden, especially following all that has happened. I will not tell you that what happened was right or just, because it was not. Whatever your father did, has done, would do in the future, Adam killed him out of spite and rage, without any thought or consideration of consequences. The slaughter of your friends on top of that was unnecessary. The indiscriminate genocide that follows was excessive in the extreme, and I cannot make any of it better. The truth is, other demonic nobility and powers in hell would not work with us. You are, to put it bluntly, our only option.
Charlie felt the kind words wash off her like waves receding out to sea. It made her feel good for a moment, to be understood and empathized with, but she found it changed nothing. His apologies wouldn't bring her family back.
I'll rule and play nice on one condition, she said. No exterminations. For 5 years.
There was a moment of quiet before Michael scoffed.
No, the demon scum must be culled,
the Archangel of War hissed.
Their blood must spill.
No, no, let's hear her out, Gabriel said. Why 5 years?
Sarah asked after a moment, seemingly genuinely confused.
Why not ask for it forever? You won't give me forever, Charlie stated. I know that, but I need time to fix what Adam destroyed. I need to cement my own rule and establish myself among the other powers in hell. 5 years. If not, you'll have to find someone else.
Another moment of silence. Then Sarah gave a short nod.
Done.
Michael glowered at her.
No.
Gabriel ignored his brother and bowed his head in assent to Sarah's direction.
Done.
Michael rolled his eyes.
Fine. So be it. Abandon the traditions that has kept the demons in check for centuries.
The other two angels ignored his sardonic words.
Well, do you have any other questions?
Sarah asked.
Anything you want to tell us?
She stared into the seraphim's eyes, narrowing her own in disdain and setting her mouth in a thin, furious expression of caged hatred.
I will never forgive you, she said, looking at all of them,
even Gabriel.
Any of you?
Michael smirked. Sarah's expression was neutral, and Gabriel nodded with calm understanding.
You may leave with Emily back to hell when you are ready, Charlie Morningstar, the compassionate angel said, motioning to the door with his staff. Thank you for your time.
Charlie pushed the doors open and stepped outside, where Emily was waiting for her. The girl was standing to the side and rushed to Charlie when she finally opened the door.
How did it go? What did they say?
She asked, looking at her with concern.
Did they tell you what they're going to do next?
Charlie sat there for a long moment, processing all that had just happened. Finally, she said it, and it felt hollow, odd, wrong. Like it wasn't real. She'd thought of this day so many times over the years, and she thought that maybe, just maybe, if she'd had enough time to prepare, she could have been ready. Now that it was bearing down on her, though, she felt like all the time in the world wouldn't have been enough.
I'm the Queen of Hell, she said softly.